KMXD in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes. This week we look at the nuts and bolts of not opening a fishery. But first, this.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game has completed its analysis of the 2020 Tanner Crab Survey for the Kodiak, Chignik, and South Peninsula districts. Managers have chosen to leave these fisheries closed for the 2021 season. But what goes into making that decision? When I fished, I always imagined a big pile of crab that, once it gets big enough, can stand to have a sustainable portion removed without harming the long-term fishery. That is true, it turns out, but it's a lot more complicated than that. Managers look at two different measures of the health of a fishery. They establish whether the stock meets or exceeds an abundance threshold. Then they establish whether it meets or exceeds a minimum guideline harvest level. But what are those two things, and how do they differ? I sat down on the telephone with Nathaniel Nichols, Kodiak Area Manager for Shellfish and Groundfish, and he got me squared away. What is the difference between a guideline harvest level and an abundance threshold? For instance, the Chignik District exceeded the abundance threshold but was below the minimum GHL.
I think the easiest way to think about the abundance threshold is that those really look at the biology and the reproductive component of the stock, and the GHL thresholds are a management component. So when we're looking at abundance thresholds, we're trying to make sure that the stock has enough sexually mature male crab in it that removing some of them won't harm that stock's ability to reproduce in the future.
Okay, so the stock is healthy enough to have some skimmed off the top. What comes next?
The next thing we do is we calculate what the maximum GHL is. And so a GHL is a guideline harvest level. So simply put, it's just the quota. It's what we're looking to catch. And that's just set on the legal male component of the stock. So those are different. A sexually mature crab is probably about 4.5 inches. A legal male crab is 5.5 inches. So those two thresholds are looking at different pieces. Again, the abundance threshold makes sure that the biology is all taken care of. The minimum GHL is really a management consideration. It says, for Chignik, for example, the minimum GHL is 200,000 pounds. So if there aren't enough legal male crab in the survey estimate to get a GHL of 200,000 pounds, then that's where you find yourself in a situation like we found ourselves this year, where we met that abundance threshold, but we didn't have enough legal crab to meet a minimum GHL.
Which seems to beg the question, couldn't you just make your guideline harvest level whatever is sustainable? Why does there have to be a minimum guideline level?
Tanner fishing can be pretty fast, pretty competitive. If we had an 18,000 pound GHL or something really small, to use that as an example, that would be pretty difficult to manage. So, it's 200,000 pounds in Chignik. So there was a need from the department to have sort of bigger GHLs to sort of buffer management imprecision.
Very interesting. We talk about the Kodiak District right after this.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
Two of Kodiak District's six sections met or exceeded minimum GHLs, which is the threshold for opening a commercial fishery. Why did managers choose to leave it closed?
We actually met the minimum abundance thresholds in three sections. So east side, southeast, and southwest all met that sort of biological threshold to consider a fishery. And the next step is to calculate GHLs and see if we can meet our minimum GHLs. Kodiak actually has three sort of separate but intertwined GHL thresholds. So each individual section must have at least 100,000 pounds before it can open. We have to have at least two sections, and those two sections combined have to have at least 400,000 pounds before the district can open, before we can have a fishery in Kodiak. So we met abundance thresholds in three sections, and then we had to start doing the math to see if we could meet all of those different minimum GHLs. The east side did not meet its minimum 100,000 pound section GHL. Both of the south east and southwest sections did meet the 100,000 pound minimum, and when combined, just barely met the 400,000 pound district threshold.
But you still chose to leave it closed. What other considerations did you factor in?
So, you know, as managers, the only choices we had at that point are 400,000 pounds or nothing, right? Because we can't go less than 400,000. So we had to look at the structure of the stock and take into consideration handling, bycatch, performance, how long a fishery might, you know, last with a 400,000 pound GHL. To get to that 400,000 pounds, we would have needed to push the harvest strategy sort of towards its maximum exploitation rate, which is 30% of legal males. So essentially one in three legal males that are in the water. It's pretty aggressive. Typically in the Kodiak area, we have set harvest rates that are in the 10 to 14% range, something like that. That's probably more common. You get a fishery that wraps up in, you know, a reasonable amount of time, you know, weeks instead of months. And that's, you know, that's typically good for the participants. And it also reduces bycatch because you're, you know, you've got a pretty high proportion of legal crab in the pot, so you're not having to sort through tons and tons of sublegals. So when you're forced to contemplate a fishery that's really at that higher end of the exploitation rate, you know you're going to have sort of a slower, scratchy fishery because you're asking the fleet to go find one in three crab that we estimated from the survey. That was pretty similar to last year. Last year we also had a pretty high exploitation rate. It was scratchy fishing, and it lasted almost 2 months in the east side. And we had a lot of talk about bycatch because we've got a really big group of crab in the water that are not legal yet, but they are becoming sexually mature, and so they're big enough to be in the gear, but not big enough to be legal to be kept. So, you know, we've got this group of crab from 2018, and it was a huge estimate. 270 million crab was the initial estimate in 2018. They're persisting. They're getting bigger. We're encouraged about, you know, their potential to contribute to fisheries here in the next few years. But that being said, we are also real sensitive to handling and discarding them a lot here when we know there's going to be a lot of them in the gear and, you know, probably a pretty high ratio of sublegal crab to legal crab. So for all of those reasons, the department decided to not have a 2021 fishery. We'll do the 2021 survey. Hopefully this 2018 group will persist, will grow, will get some proportion of them will become legal crab next year in the 2021 survey and may provide for some fishing opportunity in 2022.
And that does lead to my last question, which is, does the potential for bycatch mortality on sublegal male crabs, does that possibly bode well for the future of the fishery? And if so, how much confidence can you have in that kind of projection?
So it does bode well. I am very cautious about projecting or forecasting crab. Every year's fishery is ultimately based entirely on the previous survey. Every cohort of crab is its own beast. They all have their own environmental conditions to deal with and their own sort of predator field to deal with. So they all are out there on their own and surviving at different rates. Kodiak has been in this sort of episodic recruitment, cyclical recruitment cycle for about 20 years now. This 2018 group was the fourth of these large recruitment events that we've seen. 2013 was the previous one. The 2013 group was the largest estimate we'd seen at $200 million, and they didn't survive particularly well. And whether that was due to some of the warm water conditions, the marine heat wave that we had in 2014, 15, and early 16, or whether it was because there was a lot of cod in nearshore in some of those years, which we know prey on juvenile tanner crab, all that's up for debate. But even though that was the biggest estimate we'd seen, by the time you get about 4 years down the road, that's about how long it takes from when we first see them in the survey until they get legal in a survey for us to fish on the following winter, there weren't a whole heck of a lot of them left. So the 18, 19, and 20 seasons were largely on that 13 group of crab, but we didn't have particularly big fisheries come out of that. We had two that were the bare minimum 400, and I believe, I think 2019 was 640,000 pounds, something like that. That being said, the next group we saw was in 2018. It was quite a bit bigger than the previous largest estimate, so it was 270 million crab, and they seem to be surviving at least as well, and it looks like a little better than the 13 group. So whether that's because there's fewer predators around or because the water's a little cooler than it was, that remains to be seen. There seems to be a wider size ranges of crab in this group, so that may mean that it's just two good recruitments, sort of 2 years merged together. But what it means for the fishery is that it looks like these crab are growing a little faster, or there are just some larger crab in this group. And so typically, we've seen it take about 4 years from when we first detect them to when they enough of them are legal to start fishing on. This group, it looks like we may see that in 3 years, and counting 3 years off from 18 is next year's survey, so 19, 20, 21. It's possible that we could see a large enough proportion of this group of crab legal in next year's survey to offer some fishing opportunity on them. And if they continue to persist, then it would only the past pattern would suggest that the fishing opportunity on that group of crab would only improve through the 2022 and possibly 2023 seasons before those crabs start to age out of the population and taper off. So try to be realist about it, but there is some reason to be cautiously optimistic looking forward for the next few years of tanner crab fishing in the Kodiak area.
Hope springs eternal. That was Nathaniel Nichols, Area Management Biologist for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Thank you, Nat, for giving us a kind of a look into the mind of a wildlife manager.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, supporting conservation and harvesting of Alaska's wild, sustainable fisheries.